So we were talking about dedicating our merit. And we closed with His Holiness saying, the primary purpose of dedicating the merit is so that the virtue will bring inexhaustible results, lasting until all sentient beings attain enlightenment. That is quite a huge thought, to dedicate our merit, dedicate our practice for that. Sutra source supports this. The sutra requested by Sagaramati says, just as a drop of water poured into a great ocean will not disappear until the ocean runs dry, so too will virtue dedicated to enlightenment not disappear before enlightenment is gained. So it's like that. We add our little drop, we add our little drop, we add our little drop. And it's really vital to dedicate it. Otherwise, if we just leave it, a couple of things happen. One is, we are taught that our virtue, our merit, is destroyed by anger and by wrong views. And that by dedicating it, we protect it from that destruction. I think there's some question about whether we protect it fully at our level until we're really on the one of the paths, starting with the path of accumulation. But regardless, we certainly protect it so that our merit continues on. Secondly, we're steering it in the direction for the best possible good. So we've certainly been spending a lot of time looking at the fact that every negative action results in suffering. The corollary to that is every virtuous action results in happiness. So if we don't dedicate this merit, assuming that we've created merit on this cushion and haven't spent the whole hour enraged trying to, you know, plot revenge on somebody, in which case we haven't created any merit, but assuming that we didn't spend the whole time doing that, then if we don't dedicate it for full enlightenment, then it ripens in some other smaller way. In our future life, maybe it ripens as winning an all-expense-paid trip to Hawaii. Or if there's no Hawaii by then, an all-expense-paid trip to the coast of Montana. But whatever. I mean, that'll be very nice. But that's not why we're spending an hour, 5 hours, however many hours for doing Vajrasattva practice. That's not our goal. It's not our aspiration. Even if we dedicate for a Dharma motivation, which would be like for precious human rebirth, so we can continue to practice, that's also very good. But when that rebirth happens, then the merit's gone. Poof. Done. Complete. Exhausted. Whereas, if we dedicate for complete and full enlightenment, implicit in that are all the things that are necessary along the way. Right? So, what is required? We need to have a precious human life in order, or birth in a pure land, in order to achieve that. We need to have reliable spiritual qualified spiritual guides along the path again and again and again in order to achieve that. We need to have the means to support our practice, all kinds of physical means to be able to continue on the practice. So all of that is implied in that very, very vast intention to dedicate this energy for the complete enlightenment of ourselves and of all living beings. So there's three things we can dedicate for that accomplish that. We dedicate for the spread of the Buddha's teachings in others' mind streams and in our own. We dedicate to be looked after by spiritual guides in all our future lives. And or we dedicate to achieve peerless, uncomplete enlightenment for ourselves and all living beings. Any one of these will accomplish the purpose. And so the dedication prayer that we have at the end of Vajrasattva takes care of two explicitly, and then the third is implicit. So we say, due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Vajrasattva. That's our enlightenment. That we may be able to benefit, relieve all sentient beings from their suffering. That's our motivation, right? May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow, the awakened mind. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. So here we're dedicating for our own enlightenment. We want to do it for the benefit of sentient beings. And we're dedicating that the doctrine will spread and spread and spread and spread and spread, implying that we will be cared for by spiritual guides all along the way. So you'll see these three in various of the sadhanas that we have. They pop up. Like in the Tara one, for example, there's an explicit request to be reborn, that we and all beings be reborn in the Pure Land. So things like that pop up in the various prayers that we have. But by doing the dedication prayers, reading Shantideva's whole chapter of dedication and Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, we get to experience how the great beings dedicate. And as Khensur Wangdak taught us, dedicate like them. And if we're not as eloquent as they are, then it's really okay to say, I'm dedicating this just like he did. Just like Shantideva did, or just like whomever did. That's good enough. It's directing our mind. And then we close with what's called the circle of three. That's reflecting on the fact that the agent, the object, and the action are all three mutually dependent. So that means what? In this case, the agent is me, the person, the dedicator. The object might be the merit that we're dedicating. We'll use that one. And the action is the act of dedicating. So you can't call anybody a dedicator unless you have a dedication. You can't have a dedication unless you have something to dedicate. You can't have a dedication unless you have somebody who's dedicating. You can't have the act of dedication without the dedicator and the thing to dedicate. So all of these elements are mutually dependent, none of them existing inherently from its own side in its own right. And we can do that with all the parts of the practice. You can make the agent is me, the dedicator. The object is the sentient beings that I dedicate for, the merit that I dedicate for. The enlightenment that we dedicate for might be the object as well. So you can look at all these integrated circles of threes, and the more these circles of threes you see, the more you see how everything is completely interdependent. And if we reflect just a little bit on the interdependence of all those things, that leads us into thinking about the emptiness of inherent existence. They're not findable. They don't exist on their own, from their own side, of their own accord, standing in space as we have labeled them in this way. They don't. And so it doesn't matter whether you have much understanding of emptiness or not. Thinking in this way, as we dedicate the merit at the end, helps us get a sense of what that interdependence really is about, and helps us get a sense of reflecting on emptiness, which is very useful. It's also very useful if you have the kind of mind, I used to have this, like, what is this merit? It's like there's some big bank up there and I'm winning brownie points, and it really irritated me. It had a lot to, it was sort of similar to, saving up your good points so you'll go to heaven, is what it reminded me of. But if we think for a second that this stuff is not inherently existent, even though they often actually use the metaphor of putting it in your merit bank, there's no inherently existent merit bank. There's no inherently existent merit coin. These things are not solid and fixed. So, which is why dedicating our merit works. We are creating the causes, putting our thoughts, directing our thoughts again towards our goal of awakening. That's why it works. Venerable Chodron says, when she taught on this, she also said it's very useful to, when we're dedicating, think about the nice steps along the way too. So we dedicate for the full enlightenment of ourselves and all living beings, but it's also good to reiterate, and may I have a precious human rebirth where I can meet teachers and so forth. It's good because it reminds us that these are the steps that are needed, and the more we train our minds in that, she says, the more likely that dedication will come up as we're dying. And if we have a familiarity with that thought, then those thoughts at the time of death will direct we'll direct them to ripen that way as well. So, although our prayer is very good and concise and includes everything, if you take an extra moment and think about what that means, or think about the steps along the way, dedicating for a precious human rebirth, never to be separated from qualified Mahayana teachers, recognizing them, following their teachings, not being a stubborn student, but really wishing to follow them directly, having all conducive circumstances for practice. Then we've completed what we started at the beginning. You know, in all the Lojong teachings, the Kadampa teachings, in fact, it's the thought training slogan. Something at the beginning, something at the end, something like that. Dedicate, motivate. So that dedicate. I'm a little dyslexic. Motivate, dedicate. And then the whole time that we've been doing our Vajrasattva practice really ripens someday in our complete and perfect Buddhahood.